for what's Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Two Coptic Christian churches in Egypt were the targets of suicide bombing Sunday that killed at least 44 people and wounded dozens of others. The attacks were claimed by Islamic State. Funeral processions were held late Sunday among the mourners. Coptic priest Taufik Kobesh, who described what he called the miserable and painful feeling caused by this cruel experience. The churches targeted St. George in Tanta, north of Cairo, St. Mark's Cathedral in Alexandria. Coptic Pope Tewodros had been leading the mass there at the time of the blast, but escaped injury. After the bombings, President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, appearing on state television, declared a three-month state of emergency. He said security forces are searching for those responsible. Coptic Bishop Suriel of Melbourne, Australia, welcomed the heightened security measures.
Lots more needs to be done to step up the security to protect Christians that are losing their lives. There's police officers that are also losing their lives in the Sinai region.
The blasts appear to have been timed for maximum impact as people gathered to mark Palm Sunday. Pope Francis, scheduled to visit Egypt this month, denounced the bombings, expressed his deep condolences. A Chinese warship and an Indian helicopter prevented an attack on a Tuvalu-flagged merchant ship by suspected Somali pirates. The vessel came under attack Saturday. A Chinese boarding party reached the 19-member Filipino crew holed up in the ship's strong room known as the Citadel after they sent out a distress call. The ship is currently under escort and no arrests were made. The attempted hijacking came days after pirates seized an Indian dhow en route from Bosaso from Dubai. This is VOA News. President Donald Trump's top national security adviser says Friday's missile strike at a Syrian air base following the use of chemical weapons was not part of a unilateral effort to remove President Bashar al-Assad from power. The attack blamed on Damascus killed at least 70 people. But H.R. McMaster told Fox News Sunday the limited strike was intended to send a clear message.
What's significant about this strike is not that it was meant to take out the Syrian regime's capacity or ability to commit mass murder of its own people, but it was to be a very strong signal to Assad and his sponsors that the United States cannot stand idly by as he is murdering innocent civilians. What was a red line in 2013?
On a separate television program Sunday, U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley said the aim of U.S. policy is to see a political solution to the six-year conflict, hopefully without Mr. Assad.
In no way do we look at peace happening in that area with Iranian influence. In no way do we see peace in that area with Russian covering up for Assad. In no way do we see peace in that area with Assad as the head of the Syrian government. And we have to make sure that we're pushing that process. The political solution has to come together for the good of the people of Syria.
Secretary of State Rex Tillerson Sunday blamed Russia, a Syrian regime ally, for failing to live up to its commitments under the 2013 chemical weapons agreement. Tillerson, now in Italy, meets Russian officials in Moscow Wednesday. President Trump is requesting options from his national security team for removing the threat of a nuclear-armed North Korea. A U.S. Navy strike group is steaming toward the Korean Peninsula, a decision National Security Advisor McMaster called prudent. Secretary Tillerson said North Korea's growing capability to strike is alarming.
The assessments are obviously somewhat difficult, but clearly he has made significant advancements in delivery systems, and that is what concerns us the most.
North Korea has been trying to develop a long-range missile carrying a nuclear warhead capable of hitting the U.S. mainland. At least six people were killed, more than 100 injured in clashes Sunday between police and protesters during a by-election in Srinagar in Indian Kashmir. Dozens of polling stations were forced to be closed. Separatists had called for a boycott of the vote. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and members of the British royal family were among thousands attending ceremonies marking the 100th anniversary of a World War I battle in France known as the Three-Day Battle of Vimy Ridge. Nearly 3,600 Canadian troops, more than 7,000 others, were killed and wounded fighting against German troops for control of the 8-kilometer ridge. Family, friends, and fans paid their final respects Sunday to rock and roll legend Chuck Berry at the Pageant Theater in his hometown of St. Louis. Berry died last month at age 90. Former President Bill Clinton remembered Berry as one of America's greatest rock and roll pioneers. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, April 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Egypt's president declares a three-month state of emergency after bombings of two Coptic churches killed 45 people.
Coptic churchgoers and rescue workers picked through the debris inside the St. George Coptic Cathedral in Tanta, north of Cairo in the Nile Delta.
This view correspondent Edward Urania in Cairo. Makerere University Professor Stella Nyanzi is expected in court today to answer charges of cyber harassment of President Museveni and his wife. Gambia's United Democratic Party wins a slim majority in last Thursday parliamentary elections. And Congo's main opposition coalition has called yet another protest today, Monday, to pressure President Kabila.
Mr. Kabila, he has done what we call a coup d'etat. What he has done has nothing to do with the accord. He has appointed a new prime minister, which is not a member of the Rassemblement.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC known as the Rassemblement. And Guinea-Bissau authorities arrest protesters demanding President José María Vaz leave power. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's post and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Islamic State has claimed responsibility for Sunday's bombings at two Coptic churches in Egypt that killed at least 44 people and injured more than 100. After the bombings, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi declared a three-month state of emergency. The two bomb attacks struck Coptic churches in Egypt as worshippers flocked to church for Palm Sunday services. Edward Urania reports from Cairo.
Coptic churchgoers and rescue workers picked through the debris inside the St. George Coptic Cathedral in Tanta, north of Cairo in the Nile Delta. Pews were broken and overturned, and blood-stained clothing and body parts were strewn on the ground. Eyewitnesses say an explosion took place near the church altar as worshippers recited prayers on Palm Sunday, which begins the Christian Holy Week. Victims of the blast were taken to several nearby hospitals, and residents of Tanta were urged to donate blood. Dr. Amjad Abdul Rauf, dean of the Tanta Medical College, says doctors are doing their best to care for victims of the blast. He says that more than 60 wounded people were taken to two government hospitals. He said some victims had suffered burns and others were being treated for shrapnel wounds. A second explosion occurred hours later outside the main Coptic cathedral in the Egyptian port city of Alexandria. Police indicated a suicide bomber struck outside the church. A Coptic church spokesman said the head of the church, Pope Tewodros III, who was conducting Palm Sunday services inside the church, may have been the target of the attack. People in the streets outside the church scattered in all directions following the bomb blast, shouting and screaming as they ran. The Islamic State group claimed responsibility for both church bombings. Egypt's Mufti Shawki Alam condemned the group and insisted those that belong to Islamic State are not authentic Muslims. He called the group a criminal terrorist group by all measures and insisted that Egypt is at a critical point in the life of our nation and that everyone must exert more effort to put an end to extremist ideology and errant interpretations of Islam. In Rome, the head of the Roman Catholic Church, Pope Francis, condemned the bombings. Sources close to Pope Francis told Arab media he has not canceled plans to visit Egypt later this month. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, the main opposition coalition, known as the Rassemblement, has called yet another protest today, Monday, to pressure President Joseph Kabila to implement the December 31st, 2016 agreement. The latest protest comes days after President Kabila appointed Bruno Tshibala as the new prime minister of a power-sharing government called for in the agreement. Mr. Tshibala was kicked out of the main opposition party in March after contesting for a successor to the late opposition leader Etienne Tshisekedi. Martin Fayulu, a member of the Rassemblement, says President Kabila has staged a coup d'etat by choosing a prime minister who is not a member of the Rassemblement, as called for in the agreement.
Mr. Kabila, he has done what we call a coup d'etat. What he has done is has nothing to do with the accord. He has appointed a new prime minister, which is not a member of the Rassemblement.
But the new prime minister, Mr. Tshibala, used to be a member of the opposition.
Used to be the member of UDPS, but he's not anymore a member of UDPS. UDPS has sent him away because Mr. Tshibala, now it's known that he was in relation with Kabila's side. They jailed him in October last year. They put him in jail just to give him some weight, saying that he's a member of the opposition, he's a strong member of the opposition. Mr. Tshibala was with us, but he has gone against what the Rassemblement said.
Mr. Fayulu, you said that the purpose of Monday's demonstration is to force President Kabila to implement the accord. How is the protest going to do that? What do you expect to happen on Monday?
When I say that is to force Mr. Kabila to implement the accord, but that means it's not to force him as a person. It is to force him to send the people to come and sit down and sign the arrangement particulier. We have to sign that arrangement so the accord can be implemented. We signed the accord on December 31st last year. After signing the accord, we said that, okay, we have to sign another paper to have a planning of implementing that accord. That's what is still remaining. We were almost about to sign that paper, but Mr. Kabila people in the dialogue, they didn't want to agree on the 2 points, which is the way of appointing the prime minister. In the accord, it stated that the prime minister should be presented by the Rassemblement. But now they want us to give 3 names. We say, no way. The second thing was, who will be replacing the late Etienne Tshisekedi? They said that in the accord, it stated that the president of the National Commission, which will see how to implement the accord, that person should be the president of what we call the Conseil des Sages of the Rassemblement. And they say, no way, they don't want it. This is the 2 points that we disagree.
The Rassemblement continues to have protests. At the same time, this is April, and soon the year will come to an end and there will be an election. It seems to me President Kabila probably is succeeding in further dividing you, the opposition, so that you will stand no chance of contesting the election.
This is Kabila's method just to divide. This is Kabila's method to buy some weak people. But we continue to say that Mr. Kabila now is not anymore the president. If we don't implement the accord, Mr. Kabila cannot say that he's the president. We will continue to demonstrate and we'll tell to the people of Congo and the international community to not recognize Mr. Kabila as the president of Congo, because Mr. Kabila has ended up his mandate as the president from December 19th last year.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the Democratic Republic of Congo, known as the Rassemblement. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Today's Monday, April 10th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 14 and a half minutes past the hour. Protesters were arrested in Guinea-Bissau's capital on Saturday during a demonstration calling for President José Mário Vaz to leave office. Carlos de Silva, a spokesperson for the local group Movement of Conscious and Nonconformist Citizens, tells Ricky Schreier that President Vaz is unable to properly manage the country through the ongoing political crisis.
Before we could start our protest, our vigil, the police just come around in the car and get off, swatting, kicking off the tunnel that was alighting all over the road. As they saw the people were not running away, they took the baton, starting beating on people. And some people still keep determined not go anywhere, even being beaten. And they, as they saw the determination of the people, they took the tear gas, launching on the people, and many people starting dispersing on their way.
What was the purpose of this protest?
The protest is, as always, against the president, Samuel Vaz, because he wants him to step down.
How did Saturday's protest end? Was anyone arrested? And what's next?
Yeah, because after the people dispersing, they came around, starting searching for the leaders of the movement. They're arresting two of the leaders, more five people, because as many people are taking the pictures and the films, they don't want the pictures to go, you know. They don't want people to know the reality, to see the scene. And they're starting and out and hand on the people who got the film and something else. They took the phone and even refused to write the pictures. They took the arrest and taking the car. And also they follow the leaders and they could find two of them and arrest them.
Are these leaders still in jail or have they been released?
Yeah, they have been released because UN went there. We reported to UN what's going on. They were around and they went there and asked them why arrested people for nothing. You know, and with the pressure of them there, they released those guys. Now they're free. But there are two guys who are in jail, but they're not from the movement. Other people were passing by and they took pictures.
What's next for your movement?
Next, we are waiting because we know that the president of Senegal, Macky Sall, is coming to Bissau. He's one of the members of the ECOWAS. We know that they are not doing anything to Guinea-Bissau. They could have done as they did in the Gambia, but here in Guinea-Bissau, maybe they didn't care. They are not doing anything. And we are waiting for him. When he's coming, we are preparing our protest against him, against his president that is backing up, which is Amary Vaz. We are telling him, well, you are not welcome to our country because you are not helping to do anything. This is our next step. It will take place 21, 22nd, 23rd.
That was Carlos De Silva, a spokesperson for the local group Movement of Conscious and Nonconformist Citizens. He was speaking to Ricky Schreier from Bissau. In Uganda, Makerere University Professor Stella Nyanzi, arrested last Friday, is expected in court today, Monday, to answer charges of cyber harassment of President Yoweri Museveni and his wife. Nyanzi has also been accused of soliciting funds to provide sanitary pads for schoolgirls. Ugandan police were not immediately available for comment, but Nicholas Opio, Professor Nyanzi's lawyer, says police roughly handled Professor Nyanzi during her arrest.
Professor Nyanzi was arrested on Friday night under the cover of darkness by armed security officials. Her clothes were torn off. She was unconscious, and her lower limbs were unable to stand. When we traced her on Saturday afternoon, we found her in a police cell, unable to stand, unable to walk because her lower limbs were paralyzed. She had gained conscience. And when we inquired why she was being detained, we were told she's being detained for the offenses of cyber harassment and abusing the President of the Republic of Uganda and his wife, who is also the Minister of Education. She's also being accused of soliciting support to provide sanitary pads to schoolgirls without registration. The police have indicated to us that she will be produced in court today. So we wait to see if that is going to happen. We attempted to secure her release on a police bond, but the police were unable to give us a bond.
You said she's being accused. Is that the same as she is being charged?
The police have formally read to her a charge and caution statement. And in the charge and caution statement, they indicated that she's being charged with those offenses. Now, the charges haven't been brought before a court of law for her to take plea. But the police have prepared a charge sheet that indicates those three offenses. When and if she's taken to a court, she will then be asked to plead whether she's guilty or innocent. of those charges.
The last time we ran a story about Professor Yanzi, she was denied permission to leave the country to attend a conference. What is going on between Professor Yanzi and the government?
Professor Yanzi has been very, very courageous. She's taken on the wife of the president. The whole thing began when the president, during his campaign, promised that as a measure to keep young girls in school, his government, if elected, would provide sanitary pads to girls in school. The president won the election and appointed his wife as the Minister of Education, who then went to Parliament and said, forget it, there's no money, we are not going to provide sanitary pads to girls at school. So Professor Nyanzi took that as a challenge and began to collect money from the public. She's had overwhelming support. She's collected sanitary pads to give to young girls in primary schools. But she's also taken on to social media to use very flowery and poetic language to express herself about what she was doing. Now, that appeared to have upset the First Lady, who is the Minister for Education, and hence the security forces kicked in and have done what they have done to her. So there's been a pattern of arresting people who speak on social media against members of the First Family.
You said when you visited Professor Yanzi in prison that she could hardly stand up. Are you suggesting that she was mal-handled by the police?
Well, her clothes were all torn, suggesting that the arrest was violent. She was denied access to family for over 16 hours. She was in her menstrual period. They denied her a chance to get sanitary pads to wear. So she was mistreated.
Nicholas Opio is the lawyer for Makerere University, Professor Stella Nyanzi. He was speaking with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Gambia's former main opposition, United Democratic Party, has won a slim majority in last Thursday's parliamentary elections. Sini Mariner reports from Banjul.
It is the first since the departure of 22-year-old longtime ruler Yahya Jammeh, who fled to Equatorial Guinea in January after the intervention of ECOWAS military forces. The National Assembly under Jammeh was a robust stamp. His APRC party maintained a majority throughout his dictatorship and unanimously passed any bill from his regime. Former ruling party, now opposition APRC, has not put up candidate in all this, the first in 22 years. The National Assembly has 58 members, but only 53 will be elected and 5 others members appointed by the president by the constitution of the Gambia.
I, Ali Muammar Ndiaye, chairman of the Independent Electoral Commission, having received and announced the results from the 7 returning officers in the 53 constituencies in the National Assembly elections of 6 April 2017, in the presence of representatives of the contesting candidate, hereby declare the final results of the elections as follows. UDP won 31 seats. APRC won 5 seats. NRP won 5 seats. UDC won 5 seats. PDOIS won 4 seats. PPP won 2 seats. And there was one independent candidate who succeeded. Dated 6 April 2017, signed Ali Muammar Ndiaye.
The United Democratic Party, formerly the main opposition party of veteran politician lawyer Usainu Darboe, win a slim absolute majority with 31 seats in the 58th parliament. Jammeh APRC collapsed with just 5 seats. Opposition Gambia Democratic Congress of the former lawmaker and ally Mama Kande won 5 seats with PDYS, NRP and both coalition government members. Alhaji Muammar Ndiaye is the chairman of the Independent Electoral Commission, who fled to Senegal during the political impasse after declaring President Adama Barrow as winner of the presidential election.
For the peaceful nature in which this election took place, there has not been any major problem anywhere throughout the country. And all those who won knew that they had voted for them. And those who did not win also must take consolation that it was done in a transparent, fair and free manner in the presence of themselves or their agents. That is why I have to use this occasion to thank all the electorate.
Voter turnout in the Gambia's parliamentary election dipped compared to the turnout for the presidency. International observers from the United Nations, ECOWAS, AU, and the European Union both described the polls as free and fair, while calling for improvement on voter education and training. Mohamed Ibn Chambers is the UN Special Envoy for West Africa.
The UN is very pleased with what we have seen the last few days. It was a major test for the new government. Let's not forget that this new Gambia is only 3 months old. It came to bed through a very tumultuous, painful process. And so soon after the government came into being, to be faced with the challenge of conducting parliamentary elections, was no mean test. And yet, as all the observers, the ECOWAS yesterday, today the African Union and the EU have said, the Gambia has come out of this very creditably. That sets the basis for moving forward.
Reporting for VOA News, I am Sini Marina in Banjul.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with the Confederation of African Football President Ahmed Ahmed's visit to Johannesburg to meet with the leaders from the COSAFA region at the weekend. The CAF president said after the executive meeting of COSAFA that he is counting on the support from the region to succeed in his change agenda.
I'm here to assure my colleagues that I'm COSAFA member. Even I'm president of CAF, but I'm COSAFA member first. And I trust on them to help me very closely for this challenge.
Part of the change the present leadership of CAF is considering is a possibility of holding the African Cup of Nations from every 2 years to once every 4 years.
For AFCON, I have already talked about it. You are going to wait what happened. Because the change too is in the CAF now. We open the door for the star. They have something to bring to improve our football.
Elsewhere, the Tunisian Football Federation has announced the sacking of Henry Kasbazak from his position as its national team coach. The 70-year-old who led Tunisia to the finals of the 1996 African Cup of Nations returned for a second spell in charge in 2015, but the series of defeat in two international friendlies in March against Morocco and Cameroon was not good enough for him to keep his job. And now to the CAF Confederations Cup. There were a total of 14 matches that were played in the first leg of the CAF Confederations Cup playoff round tie played on the continent during the weekend. Title holders TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo continued the defense of the African Confederations Cup crown with a 2-0 win over Algerian side JS Kabylie. Platinum Stars lost 2-0 to Ivory Coast champions AS Tada. CF Mwanana defeated ASEC Mimosa 2-1. In Monrovia, Super Sports United played to a 1-1 draw against host Barak Young Controllers of Liberia. Enugu Rangers were held to a 2-2 draw by Zambian club Zesco United. On Saturday, Recreativo do Lobilo and CNAPS settled for a 1-1 scoreline, while Bidvest Wits and Samoa settled for a 0-0 draw. KCCA defeated Almasri 1-0, while Young Africans defeated MC Alger by the same goal margin. The second legs of the playoffs that pit the losers from the Champions League against winners from the earlier rounds of the Confederations Cup are on the weekend of the 14th to the 16th of April. Now to Kenya, where the Football Kenya Federation says it will do whatever it takes to have the Premier League matches back on television. This was after the pay TV channel with the rights to broadcast the KPL matches terminated its broadcast partnership with the KPL. FKF chairman Nick Wendua said he will meet KPL officials and KPL clubs representatives early next week. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. The Islamic State has claimed responsibility for Sunday's bombings at two Coptic churches in Egypt that killed at least 44 people and injured more than 100. And that's it for this Monday, April 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barton, Washington, saying, have a productive week, Africa.
Hello, I am your host, Shaka Sali. Every Wednesday night, the Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the Anglophone crisis in Cameroon. The nation's English-speaking minority regions say they are being politically and economically marginalized by the Francophone government. Cameroon politics, an in-depth discussion on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.